been an interesting week, huh, Norman?
It has been an interesting week. There's been a lot going on. I hear, you know, Providence has won a game. Yes, DePaul beat the crap out of Arizona State. Nothing else happened in and around the Big East, I don't think, right?
No, I think that's about it. Big DePaul win.
Yes, a big DePaul win, because that is what everybody cares about. 12. This is Not Half Bad, your podcast covering St. John's and Rutgers basketball, hosted by Norman Rose of RumbleInTheGarden.com.
And I'm Dave White of OnTheBanks.com.
You can find us on Twitter. I'm E Coast Bias, that's ECOASTBIAS on Twitter.
And I'm Dave _ White, which is just really easy.
It is very easy. So, yes, not a whole lot has gone on with the Big East this week. There was a big DePaul win, and then Rutgers coach got suspended.
And something with the Catholic schools?
Yeah, something about the Catholic schools breaking away, quote-unquote, a Catholic seven. But let's start with Rutgers coach Mike Rice and why he isn't on the bench and why David Cox is the one who's not throwing his jacket and directing the surprisingly good Miles Mack and Rutgers Scarlet Knights.
Yeah, Mike Rice got suspended for something. He didn't even do it this year. Apparently in previous seasons during practice, according to, you know, some websites in the Star Ledger, he was throwing basketballs at players' heads in practice, cursing them out, using really just profane language towards the players. And
you were about to say student athlete, weren't you?
I was going to say that. Oh. How silly of me. No, at Rutgers, we're student athletes.
Of course.
The old story about Rob Hodgson when he transferred from Indiana, the AD told Hodgson, you know, this means you're actually going to have to go to class, right?
Oh, so this is why Rutgers doesn't win games. Okay, continue.
Apparently Eric Murdoch, who was our made-up position director of player development, Eric Murdoch used to play at Providence, former NBA guy, local guy, was on the staff, and at the end of last season was let go for philosophical differences, and apparently had tapes of these practices, and the rumor is, according to what I've read, that you know, he was going to let the tapes out in public if he didn't get compensated, and instead our AD, Tim Pernetti, decided Rice should be suspended.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, now. So,
yeah.
Wow. Now, here's the thing. I don't think I understood the blackmail part of it. The I'm going to let these tapes out. Do you know if there's a reason why he wanted to release this information?
I don't, to be honest. Nothing I've read has.
Why are his grapes so sour?
I honestly don't know. I'm trying to look back, but yeah, it was. There has been no reasoning for that. I guess it was just an unhealthy divorce.
Huh. So what's been the impact so far? Well, first, I guess there's also been a lot of talk about, is Mike Rice's future secure? How long has he been on campus?
This is his third season.
Okay. Now, so what does this mean about his future with Tim Pernetti?
Oh, it's even tougher because now apparently, according to Jerry Carino, who writes for the Gannett newspapers, Asbury Park Press, Central Jersey, Rice now has to go through anger management classes. There will be an independent mentor sent to every practice to evaluate Rice's behavior and report back to Pernetti. And also, by the way, Mike Rice, to keep his job, needs to walk the straight and narrow and at the same time get to a postseason tournament, NIT or better.
That's, you know, that's a tall order there.
In the education world, we call that an action plan, but it's the kind of plan where we're trying to get you to improve, but we, you know, might not want you back. I'm sure that's everywhere.
No, it really is. I think in every walk of life, there is the we're taking all the steps we need to take to fire you. And if you can happen to do them all, that's great. And if you don't, you know, we have a plan in place for what comes next. That is interesting. Now, why would there be this kind of beef between Mike Rice and his administration?
I don't think there is, to be honest. I mean, Mike Rice is Tim Pernetti's first big hire. And I think Pernetti really likes Rice, and I don't know. I think he's doing all he can to give him a chance. That's just gut reaction. I think, I don't know. There's a lot of speculation that there's, that I honestly don't know enough.
Yeah. It's hard to see a coach who in this kind of environment where teams are switching conferences, you know, the Catholics as well. But Rutgers is going on to the Big Ten. And in an environment like this, it's hard to see why an AD wouldn't want to take a coach into the next conference with them. I think that you don't want to go in with that kind of uncertainty. It just seems like there's a lot of strangeness going on with a guy who's trying to build a program. And, you know, so far seems to be doing an okay job considering the historical depths of Rutgers' ineptitude.
I think you make a good point when you bring up the Big Ten. You know, the Big Ten, they have enough scandals right now. And with Ohio State being on probation and Penn State. And I think Pernetti's doing all he can to kind of stand up and say, listen, we don't tolerate this stuff. And, you know, kind of making this is a bigger than Mike Rice. It's about Rutgers and Rutgers' image. Unfortunately, what could come of this, and if Rice doesn't get into a postseason tournament, he's not going to be able to recruit.
Yeah.
I mean, who's going to want to send their kid to play for these stories that are out there? The guy who runs his practices that way. That's what's troublesome.
This sort of stuff is, you know, they say that these days you cannot run a program like that. You know, the way that Bob Knight struggled to get good players and keep good players, or the way that, you know, Billy Gillespie was run out of Texas Tech for his actions. It's obvious that, you know, that's not something that really parents or kids are really standing for anymore, you know, for good or for bad.
Right. I mean, personally, I love Rice. The energy he brought after the darkness of Fred Hill, you know, I would love to see him survive, but this is embarrassing for the university, to say the least.
Yeah. I mean, it's not the most embarrassing thing. Rutgers has a history, doesn't it?
Yeah, I was on campus during the great naked free throw scandal of 1998. And
which coach was that? O'Bannon?
Kevin Bannon. Mm-hmm. And the great, I had, you know, I was in my third year of season tickets during the great, I missed a game because I was caught in an airport during a blizzard, Gary Waters extravaganza. And
I never heard that one. What happened?
Rutgers had a game against Marquette coming up. It was the first year. It was Quincy Doobie's big year. So the first year those teams came into the league. And Waters flew back to Ohio to be inducted into the Hall of Fame for Kent State. He was a Kent State coach, got them to the Sweet 16. Mm-hmm. So he was inducted into their Athletic Hall of Fame. It was like nobody thought anything of it. He had permission. It was like Friday or Saturday night, and there was a game the next day, but he flew out and there was a blizzard and all the airports shut down and he could never get back. Fred Hill coached the team to a big win over Marquette. Rutgers was on the bubble, and everybody turned against Gary Waters at that moment for missing the game.
Wow. And they turned towards Fred Hill.
Yeah, which a brilliant move that was, you know. In fact, that was my thought when I heard about all the tirades of Mike Rice. I thought Rutgers basketball coaches only cursed and swore at baseball umpires.
And the Kevin Bannon story, what was the story behind the naked free throws? It was a punishment, right?
Yeah, it was a free throw shooting contest, and the loser, it was like they played strip free throws.
Ew.
Yeah, I know. And the loser had to the losers had to run a lap in the nude.
Ew.
Yeah,
I do remember that, but ew.
Yeah. So that was fun. And just like this Rice thing, it came out years later when it was Josh Sanks transferred to Holy Cross, and Holy Cross made a run in the NCAA tournament, and they interviewed this kid, and he started telling everybody about it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Dropping dimes. Carmelo Anthony would never stand for that.
No.
Stop snitching.
I was just going to say, snitches get stitches.
Yep.
So it's kind of like Groundhog Day. It's the same thing again. And what's interesting is there's talent on this Rutgers team, and it seems like, I think I said it last time, they seem just a hair away from putting it together.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I think makes this interesting, to see how this team responds. They really responded on Sunday against UAB. They came out and shot 15 for 16 to start the game.
Miles Mack was killing it. I saw part of the game.
Yeah, Miles Mack has been ridiculous. He scored 23 points. He's fast, you know, running the point. And
he's missed one free throw all year.
Yeah, it's just amazing. And Eli Carter backed him up, you know, 20 points.
Mm-hmm.
And they seem like they're almost there. Once they figure out the defense, they could be really good. And I think, personally, that's what makes this Mike Rice situation so compelling, because everything seems to be like on a tightrope.
Mm-hmm.
Both his behavior, but the team as well. They could go either way. And who knows? Maybe he comes back, walks straight and out, the team puts it together, and they make a run. Or it could blow up in their face.
I watched that game on our vision, and I was really impressed with, well, for one, Kadeem Jack, who I kind of thought would be one of those guys who is an athlete who takes too many jumpers. He's a big man, you know, he's 6'9" or whatever. I thought he'd be one of those athletes who takes too many jumpers, doesn't rebound enough, and basically ends up being an ineffective, really tall, intriguing athlete who keeps getting chances. But he looked tough and gritty, sometimes better than Wally Judge. And I thought that the idea of Miles Mack running, not necessarily the point, but being the sort of creative option, the first option, worked a lot better than Eli Carter, because he's quicker with the ball in his hands. I thought, you know, he attacked very well, and Eli Carter was a good sort of second fiddle to that.
Right. I agree. I think Jack is starting to put it together. The lights kind of come on for him. I mean, he missed half the year last year with a foot injury. So he was a little behind, but I agree, he's rebounding the ball. You know, when Rutgers is in sync, they look like an NCAA team. It's when things start to go bad, they're not mature enough to handle that. Everybody kind of starts to play one-on-one.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you see that with a lot of young teams. They're not willing to run the offense and slow things down to stop the other team's run.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of these games closer than they need to be. But they seem to me, I was talking about this the other day, the opposite of what I've seen from your guys with St. John's, where St. John's will come out slow, be down 10, and force a couple turnovers and get on a run. Rutgers seems to come out hot, play real well, play real loose, and then tighten up or take their foot off the gas and let the other team back in it.
Mm-hmm. Just when they need to just make good, solid plays. And maybe it's the whole, you know, there are some teams that can only play aggressive, and in the half court, they, you know, they get a little lost, you know. They don't know when to pass the ball, when to dribble, when to probe, things like that.
Yeah, I think you see that with Rutgers, but I also think when I watch the half court, and I don't know how good UAB's defense is. I mean, all the coaches talk their opponents up. So they said it was supposed to be a good defense, but Rutgers really, for the first time, moved the ball well in the half court. Were really unselfish and tried to get it inside before going outside. So who knows? Maybe it's a step in the right direction. Maybe David Cox pressed the right buttons. I don't know what kind of difference there's going to be when, you know, you're not going to change the whole philosophy of a team for three games. But
true.
You know, the players were hot, came out on fire. They were pumped up. So Cox said the right things in the pregame.
All right. So, well, I guess we'll have to be keeping track of the great Mike Rice issue. He's got two more games out, right?
Yeah, he comes back to prepare the team for the opening of the Big East season
against Syracuse.
And I think that's when you'll find out. They made a lot of mention of it in the post game after yesterday's game about perceived chemistry issues that aren't there, and we wanted to show everybody we're playing together. I think that game you'll really see how if there's chemistry issues and how they feel about Rice, because I think him coming back should really be a boost for that team. And who knows? Maybe they come out. They're not going to beat Syracuse. Syracuse is just too good and too long. Yeah. But put a scare into them. How can I say this? This season had the potential to be an exciting one, and now it's turning into a compelling one because of the soap opera stuff.
So it's becoming a little bit more of a story than it is a sort of redemption or an emergence kind of thing. You know, there's always the story of, you know, wow, they came out of nowhere, and now it's this will be a good season to look back upon and think, where did it go wrong? What stories can we get out of what went wrong?
Yeah, or right.
Or right, yeah.
Not write it off yet. Mm-hmm. No. But what I guess that brings me to, because I'm thinking about coaches, and I'm thinking about the Big Seven, the Catholic Seven, or the Big Priest, or whatever you want to call them. Mm-hmm. And what do you think happens to these coaches when they move to a mid-major type status? Do you think Lavin sticks around? Jay Wright, Buzz Williams?
Well, you know, it's an interesting question, and I'll start. For those who have been hiding under a rock, I'll start by explaining. So there are seven, let's say, basketball only or basketball focused schools within the Big East. Marquette, St. John's, Georgetown, Villanova, Seton Hall, Providence, and DePaul. I hope I just got to seven and I didn't miss anybody. And those schools all have, you know, been watching the changes in the Big East as, you know, even the schools left 6 years ago, the Boston College, Virginia Tech, and Miami. And then they've been watching as other schools have left too, including Rutgers and then Syracuse, or Syracuse and Pittsburgh and West Virginia, and then Rutgers, and most recently Notre Dame as well. And those schools looked at the landscape and they looked at the schools coming in. Tulane is one that's often cited, but I don't think that's the only issue. They looked at the schools coming in from the Conference USA and thought, this is kind of a silly conference. This is kind of a ridiculous conference, and it doesn't focus on basketball. There's a lot of talk about whether, you know, the RPI will be strong enough or whether it'll just bring the league down. And whether true or not, I think that the move or the decision then to announce the separation from the Big East is really more about being able to control the destiny instead of having to vote on concepts of a conference that is football based, really nationwide, and not what any of these schools are good at. So, you know, in the aftermath of all of this, there is a lot of questions about. Or there are a lot of questions about money and income. There are a lot of things that will be lost, whether it be the school's portion of the exit fees from the schools that have already left, or whether it's those schools' portion of the NCAA units, where, if you don't know, conferences distribute the money from the NCAA tournament somewhat equally. There are probably different permutations of how they're distributed to award the schools that actually get there. So for a conference like the Big East, when 11 teams go and a few of them get a few rounds in, let's say you get 17-18 games of Big East 17-18 games of NCAA tournament play, that means that the NCAA distributes a certain amount of money per game. So let's say, I think it's $244,000 per game. That ends up being, you know, millions of dollars. And those millions of dollars are then distributed to all the schools, which means that a school like DePaul, that's nowhere near the NCAA tournament, ends up getting a nice chunk of money just for being associated with schools who get into the NCAA tournament. Now that money's paid out over the space of, let's see, I think it's 6 years. And because it's paid out over 6 years, there's an incentive for schools to stick around in the conference a little bit longer. So yeah, I think that there's the financial issue of how much money these schools are going to have coming in from those Big East conference disbursements, and it'll influence when they leave. But there's also the question of whether the competitive quality of this conference is going to be strong enough to gain NCAA units in the future. There's also the question of whether people are really, you know, the own fan bases are going to come out to see whatever the new schools they add to this conference, or whether those same fans will even come out to see Seton Hall versus Providence. Does that sell? We don't know yet. It does a TV. Does a TV network want to broadcast that? That's also a question, you know? Come on, you'd go to a Seton Hall Providence game.
I would now, but not until you guys leave and Rutgers goes to the Big Ten. I won't care then. It's like those weird A-10, like Temple St. Joe's, that I don't watch those games.
Yeah. It's a, you know, it's a very interesting question all around. So right now where the conferences are, they've made their official statements on leaving. St. John's is president, Father Harrington, also had some very interesting comments, which I can go into a little bit later. But the schools have made their decision to go, and they are currently looking around and possibly soliciting other schools to join in with them. Butler was one,
Xavier was the big one, right? Mm-hmm.
Butler was suggested. Xavier was another big one. Also on the list is Dayton, St. Louis, Creighton.
Household names right there.
You'd be surprised. I'll go into that in a second. I feel like I'm forgetting another Midwestern one. Oh, I guess BCU is somewhat considered, but I don't think they don't seem to be a very strong consideration. And then a couple of Western schools in St. Mary's and Gonzaga. People often ask about St. Joseph's in Philadelphia, but I don't think that Villanova wants another Philadelphia competitor. And I don't think that St. Joseph's really brings a whole lot to the table. And I think, you know, that's something that people do forget, that these decisions aren't made just because, oh, that's the cool school or the, you know, they've had good years. You have to make it with a sense of building a conference that can range a little bit. And if Villanova wants to play St. Joe's, they will continue to play St. Joe's as they do every year. They don't need to be in the same conference.
Right.
In terms of the non-household name factor of Dayton and St. Louis and Creighton, there's some very interesting things going on there, including the fact that Xavier, Dayton, and Creighton really fill up arenas. So one of the interesting things about all of these decisions is that, you know, you're talking about a number of schools that actually do pull in a lot of people to come to their home games, you know, more than, say, St. John's does or more than Villanova does to their home games. Creighton has 16,600 people who come to their downtown pro-style arena in Omaha. Dayton has 12,000 who come to the arena in Dayton, and Xavier brings in 10,000 people per game. These aren't insignificant numbers, and that does say something about the fan base's level of interest. Whether, you know, how that moves the needle, I don't know, but I think it makes for good atmospheres, and maybe that's the kind of thing that you want in a basketball-focused conference.
I think that's a good point, because you're not going to get the TV deal without the football. So you're going to have to build the way the Big East built back in the late 70s and early 80s, get a good conference tournament, a bunch of good teams battling against each other, and get some buzz that way.
Mm-hmm. Must-see TV.
Yeah. So I think it's as a basketball fan, I think it's a good idea. I'm afraid that a conference like that gets lost in the noise. And then I start to wonder about what happens to, like, a Lavin. Does he get frustrated and try to move on to a job in a major conference, or Jay Wright or Buzz Williams, you know, if, like, even in Iowa opens up, or for Jay Wright, say, who knows, Rutgers opens up down the line, you know, something like that, mm-hmm. where I it's think, a big conference, and do they try to make that jump to the conference as opposed to the tradition?
Mm-hmm. I think that one of the issues that will come up is that right now, I think people see a chance for a different level of competitiveness between those schools. And, you know, the schools Providence and St. John's have both, you know, pledged to continue to spend to win, you know, at a proper level. But I think as the conference's deals kick in, you know, the Big Ten is probably the only one that is distributing money on their with their newer deal. I think I'm not entirely sure about that, but I feel like in the future, as the schools start to really reap the money from their media rights, I think that you're going to see a few schools willing to throw funny money at things. And it's not just going to be Kentucky with their fan base, or Oklahoma State with T. Boone Pickens's oil and wind money.
Right. Yeah. And I think that becomes, I think ultimately, and I hate to say this because I love the NCAA tournament, but I think the football conferences are going to go to 16 and try to create their own not as exciting tournament and leave those, you know, basketball only schools behind, and, you know, all for the sake of money.
Mm-hmm. I feel, you know, in my mind, I realize that I'm a bit of a pessimist, and I won't throw my full pessimism on this, but I do worry that, you know, there's a lot of haves and have nots that are being separated, the wheat from the chaff, the oil from the water, the skim from the milk. Is that what has skim?
Sounds good.
Yeah, skim from the, I don't know, whatever. Or the skim from your oatmeal, if you will. And in all of the movement, I do think that there is an incentive for the bigger schools to separate on their own and create their own level of excitement. And with basketball as a secondary endeavor, you know, maybe what ends up happening is that, yes, it is a slightly more exciting or slightly more talent-laden, different money tournament while everybody else plays in this, you know, sort of second division tournament. I think that you lose a lot of what makes March Madness March Madness, but I don't know that people are actually going to turn away, because people do turn to see their school and people do turn to see the spectacle of the best playing the best. Yeah. So I don't know. Maybe that's just what the future looks like.
Yeah, hey, it's a good way. Hey, if they go four 16-team conferences, that's 64 teams. So maybe Rutgers finds a way to get into that tournament.
And they can always say, yes, we finally made the tournament. And everybody else can say, you're not part of the NCAA anymore. You have to leave to get in the tournament.
Asterisks.
Yes. But asterisks aplenty.
What's Lavin's feel for this been? I mean, I've seen some of his coach speak, press speak, like, we're going to be in a better place, like every other one of the coaches seem to have said. But do you have a vibe? Does he like the move? Would he, you know, what do you think?
I don't know that I can say anything about whether he personally likes it or does not like it. I feel that, like many of the basketball coaches, I think he feels that he's concentrating on the season first, and then second, that the changes aren't going to necessarily harm them. I think that we forget that the revenue streams for basketball aren't just the media rights tournaments. It's also being able to get to the NCAA tournament or get enough of your compatriots into the tournament and then reap some of that money. And also being able to create an exciting brand within your city that brings in revenue through ticket sales and marketing, etc. I think that Steve Lavin feels that a lot of what St. John's has done is positive in that area, and I think he has kind of a point. They've stepped up their ability to create their own programming. They've stepped up their ability to get noticed within the New York area with advertising. And I think that it's something that Steve Lavin has been very focused on, and the whole program has been focusing more on, which is a real refreshing change, I think, for St. John's fans.
Yeah, I think Lavin brought a good amount of energy, and he's brought in some good recruits, and you know, this is the time for a team like that to make some noise. It feels like this is a big season for a lot of teams in the Big East, because the perception is the conference is down. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot on the line, it feels like. You want a Rutgers kind of getting on a roll in the next 2 years so they go into the Big Ten playing good basketball. You want, you know, Catholic schools want to be playing good basketball so when they leave they're not, you know, an also-ran.
Mm-hmm.
So it feels like there are bigger stories at play here heading into the conference season that, you know, an extra buzz that could, you could kind of feel as you're watching the games. I'd be interested to see how that plays out.
I will too. I think that one underrated aspect about the current Big East, I think that there's a lot of, you know, complaining and, you know, whining about the Big East, and, you know, whether you're on the basketball school side or the football school side, you have to pick a, you know, pick the Sharks versus Jets, I guess. And if you ignore those factors, it's an interesting conference in the sense that there's no real bottom feeder, that the teams that are bad, yeah, they're not that great. Yes, DePaul's not that great, but, you know, on Ken Pom's list, I don't think a single team is under 100. This could be a disturbingly parity-laden conference where the teams at the bottom, the 6-12 and 5-13 teams, do knock off Louisville. They do knock off Pittsburgh. They do take out Notre Dame.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, Seton Hall's bad. Mm-hmm. Other than that, everybody kind of is that, you know, anybody on any night can knock somebody off.
And I think Seton Hall can do it too. So whatever Kevin Willard has them doing on defense is incredible. I can't tell because their schedule's been garbage. You know, they played, what, Louisiana State and, wait, Washington, the University of Washington, lost to both. Other than that, every team they've played has been pretty much, you know, the bottom of the NCAA, with the possible exception of Rhode Island, which is still the bottom of the NCAA, and Wake Forest, which is still the bottom of the NCAA. My
wife's alma mater, poor Wake Forest.
Oh, is it really? Your wife's alma mater?
Yep. Oh. When they were good. Mm-hmm. When Tim was there, Mr. Duncan.
Aw.
But, I agree. South Florida, look at the teams last year, like Cincinnati and South Florida, who lost to like a Presbyterian or had real underwhelming at a conference and kind of put it together. You know, that happens in the Big East a lot.
Mm-hmm. And I think, I mean, I feel like that there are certainly teams that what South Florida did was unprecedented. I don't understand it. I don't think they understand it. It wasn't just luck. It did also depend on them getting some talented players back. But there's a lot of talent in the Big East. And I think for once, there really isn't a team that has a coach that makes you go, that guy cannot coach. And there were a few teams in the past that had a that guy cannot coach sort of coach. Or Bobby Gonzalez, who, you know, was just a different sort of animal. And this year it feels like you have a league filled with coaches who can really make adjustments, who can really make a game plan, who really brought in good players. And it's really hard. It's easy to say that DePaul and South Florida and Seton Hall, or I'm sorry, I guess the narrative really has been DePaul and Seton Hall would be at the bottom with Providence. Though I think South Florida will be down there, will be right down there with them.
I think Ken Pom has South Florida ranked 118 right now. I'm trying to find it.
Oh, no, I have them at 99.
They are ranked at the bottom, though.
Yeah, they're pretty much, yeah, they are the bottom. They are below Villanova and DePaul. Villanova's 94, DePaul is 96.
Oh, okay.
And for your information, Rutgers is 80, St. John's is 87, and Seton Hall is 89.
Are we looking at the same list? I thought Rutgers was like 74. Oh, no, there they are, 80. Darn yeah. it.
They were better before, but, you know, these are also early season numbers. I think, you know, teams like Seton Hall have really fed on cupcakes, and you can build a pretty nice margin against cupcakes, and that goes into Ken Pomeroy's formula. So I think you have to wait until a little bit in the conference play to really sort out who's good and who's really, really bad.
Yeah, I agree. I don't know. It's just, it has the makings of a very interesting season, and then very interesting business side of for the next couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where we stand, I think.
Yeah.
It's, what do you guys have next coming up?
Coming up next is UNC Asheville, the ugly sweater game on Friday. It's also the debut, most likely, of point guard Jamal Branch, who, you know, may change the look of the team when he's on the floor. UNC Asheville is an intriguing team. Asheville is sort of a third or fourth home for me, so I've gotten to see a little bit of their area. I've walked through their arena, and they have some interesting talent. They're the kind of team that could be really a little bit tough on St. John's. They play hard, they rebound, and they have some kid named Bruce Hornsby who's weirdly athletic, a lot of swag, and can shoot, and is the son of Bruce Hornsby.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't even know how to comment on that.
Yeah. No, I'm so excited to make I would be so excited to make. Did I call him Bruce Hornsby? Because I meant to call him Keith. I'm so excited to make Keith Hornsby with the range kind of jokes, except I will be away.
Well, have a good time.
Yeah, wait. wait. Ask me where I'm going to be.
Where are you guys?
Well, being that the end of the world is this Friday, according to strange interpretations of the Mayan calendar, I'm going to go down to the land of the Mayans. I'm going to be down in Mexico, in the Cancun area. So I'm going to try and talk to the Mayans, tell them to keep the world going a little longer.
That sounds like a good plan.
Mm-hmm.
Rutgers has Howard on Friday.
Wow.
So losing to them would be the end of the world.
That would kind of be the end of the world. Is it an evening game on Friday, I guess? 7 p.m. Probably?
Yes, 7:30 game. I actually gave my tickets away to a guy that lives down there because it's just a pain in the neck on a Friday at holiday season.
Mm-hmm.
And then close out the out-of-conference with a Rider. So hopefully Rutgers will be flying into the Big East season and the return of Mike Rice at 9-2 and see where we go from there.
So this is the end of our second podcast. I'm not sure when we're going to do this again, but I think we're going to try in a week or so, perhaps.
Sounds like a plan to me. Hopefully we both still have our coaches and a conference at that time.
Yes, I think that's, you know, we've got 2 weeks before everything implodes for sure.
Yeah. Good. So you're going to Brazil.
Mm-hmm. No. I'm going to Mexico.
Going to Mexico. Well, I don't know why I thought Brazil, but you're going to Mexico.
I've been to Brazil.
Are you going to miss the Chicago food? Because I imagine you every night having a deep dish pizza topped with a Chicago-style hot dog.
You know, here's the thing about I've come to appreciate the Chicago-style hot dog. I like peppers. Peppers are great. Deep dish pizza, however, is an abomination. As a New Yorker, I cannot abide by it. I feel like it should be eliminated. It is like a soup pie in pizza form. It's like tomato sauce cheese soup in a bowl of bread, of burnt bread. It's not a good idea. It's kind of disgusting. And I love you, Chicago. I love your food. I love your burgers. I cannot abide by your pizza. I find it very gross.
I agree with you. Thin crust all the way.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not going like the flat thin crust. I'm talking a good New York slice with, you know, something to hold on to at the ends. That just sounds dirty, doesn't it? A little something to hold on to in your pizza. But you know what I mean.
Well, I do. So, Anyway, this is another episode of Not Half Bad. I'm Dave White, Twitter, Dave_White of onthebanks.com.
And this is Norman of rumbleinthegarden.com. You can find me at ecoastbiased, ecoastbias, on Twitter, or at rumblesbn for our official site feed. And we thank you for joining us one more time.